is Friday, November 30th, 2018. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast in the Thanksgiving lag episode. Still getting out of the Thanksgiving Turkey Day funk. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Today's show, National Climate Assessment Report dropped like a bomb the day after Thanksgiving. Despite Trump administration's attempts to bury the report under the weight of Black Friday shopping deals, the report paints a devastating picture of our future, including a 10% drop in the U.S. economy. Trump says, I don't believe it. And Trump gives a barely intelligible interview to The Post, revealing what his gut says about climate change. We'll give you a little sound clip on that in a little bit. And the Congressional Progressive Caucus, what am I doing? I'm like gobbling here, is at its largest ever, and now they are demanding important committee positions in order to support Nancy Pelosi for House Speaker. David Dayen lays out the argument for supporting Pelosi. And if you haven't seen or listened to Dayen's interview on the Majority Report this past week, you need to go back and do this. We'll put a link in the show notes. On the other hand, Chuck Schumer just can't seem to learn. He says that the Democrats are willing to give $1.6 billion to Trump's border wall in order to avert a government shutdown. In exchange for nothing. And here's a noble idea. How about $0 for Trump's racist border wall? Let's start there, maybe. What do you think, Chucky? Sinclair Media forces nearly 200 of its affiliates to run a segment defending the use of tear gas on migrant children and families. If this is not an argument to need to support independent media folks, don't know what else to tell you. Meanwhile, the Trump administration waived safety checks for all staff working at the nation's largest detention camp for migrant children. That camp keeps growing, by the way. 2,324 migrant kids and counting in the tent city in Texas. Michael Cohen pleads guilty and implicates Trump further when it comes to the Russia investigation. That'll be the headline in every other cable news show, by the way, just so you know. Looks like Putin may have been getting about a $50 million floor of a potential Moscow Trump Tower had the deal gone through. BuzzFeed News did some awesome reporting on this. Trump says, I had to run a business. Facebook scandals continue to grow as new revelations that Facebook COO Sheryl Sandberg ordered its staff to do oppo research on George Soros after he criticized Facebook and other big tech companies at the World Economic Forum earlier this year. Facebook then just basically pushed out some critical stories to reporters about Soros funding American advocacy groups critical of Facebook. There you go. Rider University, New Jersey says no way to Chick-fil-A. Given the restaurant chain's anti-LGBTQ record, Rider officials say that Chick-fil-A is not faithful to the university's values of inclusiveness. Chick-fil-A says, what do you mean? A Chinese researcher claims to have helped make the world's first genetically modified babies. Insert dystopic music here. And Ivanka Trump was found to be sending emails from a non-government server. Conservative base starts chanting, lock her up! Lock her up! That didn't happen. They said, it's different. Today's PA focus, the ever-so-swanky PA Society, is this weekend. And it launched with a reception hosted by Christine Tortetti. Yeah, she's a trustee from the
Toretti.
Toretti, my bad. Toretti, who's a trustee of the Scaife Foundation and Trump's ambassador to Malta. His high-end event was hosted at Club Macanudo. Macanudo? Not Macanudo. Macanudo?
Macanudo.
Is that Macarena? Senate Republicans are threatening to not seat Lindsey Williams because of a potential residency issue. And Daryl Metcalf is looking for some new committee positions, and he's looking for a new decade from which to tweet. And what will it be for Daryl Metcalf? Will it be House Judiciary Committee Chair or House Education Committee Chair? Or will he continue to just to kind of, I don't know, muck around outside the warrens of the white supremacist dens throughout the state? And it was a big week in space news this week. Today's last call. We'll talk about the InSight lander successfully touching down on Mars as it's preparing for several years of scientific study. NASA's looking to, privatize the race to the moon. Race to colonize the moon, that is. And time is running out for the Space Force. This week, Deputy Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan will meet with Mike Pence to try to ready legislation to drop a legislative proposal in December. And it's 2001, a space odyssey all over again as the International Space Station wakes up its first onboard AI called Simon. As soon as you give it a name, it's not going to be good, folks. Alexa, stay in orbit around the Earth. Let's hope this one has a better ending. Huge news in my neck of the woods. The Bread Box and Bakery has moved to a new prime location at the corner of Market and 7th Street in Perkasie. If you remember, the Bread Box and Bakery, it's a community-supported bakery. There was also the same guy, Ryman, used to run the Down to Earth Cafe. They've now merged the two. Now they're right on the corner, the main kind of prime location, and they launched and reopened kind of a couple weeks ago. And I was in there for the first time this week, and it's freaking awesome. Go in and check them out. The address is 1 North 7th Street in Perkasie. And tell them you heard about it at Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. And Free Will and the Bread Box and Bakery are teaming up on Wednesday, December 5th for Let's Get Lit. Right? Perkasie has a tree lighting ceremony every year and that stuff. And they're going to be kind of hanging out at the Bread Box and Bakery. Free Will's going to have beer out there. They're going to have great cookies. So grab your friends, drink some pints, raise a glass as we turn on the Christmas tree lights in Perkasie. Tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in on Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. I want to remind everyone, if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. Not ready to become a member? No problem. Just go to ragingchickenpress.org and click on the big blue donate button, the right sidebar. And with the 2018 midterm elections in the rearview mirror, we're now turning our attention to communities of resistance, building power, and progressive organizing for 2020. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement, folks. Best way to do that, become a member of Raging Chicken at patreon.com/rcpress today. So, Sean, welcome back from Thanksgiving, man.
Yeah, it's been a couple weeks.
It's been a couple weeks. We had the little off for the holiday. Kind of, you know, get back into the swing of things. You know, it's usually you come back from Thanksgiving and, you know, it takes a while for, you know, things in D.C. or things around the state to get happening. So it's really kind of a slow news week.
Yeah, nothing really too much has happened.
Not as usual. As usual. Well, let me just lead off this. I was going to talk briefly up front about this because I don't know if people have started to follow the news about after the National Climate Assessment was released, the Trump administration. This is the Trump's administration's report, right? From the scientists from that administration, kind of comes out. This is a mandated report. It was mandated by Congress to come out every 4 years. And the thing dropped like a bomb, seriously, because, first of all, it seemed to get, you know, they released it on Black Friday as a way to kind of bury the report. But it was so devastating. The report was so devastating that it even managed to break through and news coverage on that Friday and really hit started hitting the Sunday talk shows with this. And the report is like, you know, basically it's saying, hey, look, last time we did this 4 years ago, we were saying there's going to be an increase in wildfires. We were going to see these kind of powerful storms that we've never seen before and so on. And we actually expected that this was going to take, I can't remember exactly the number of years they said, before we started seeing that. Well, actually, it turns out we were wrong. It's happening quicker than we thought. They point to what the wildfires that's happening in California. They talk to the kind of superstorms that kind of hit the coast over the past year. And basically, they project, look, if nothing goes on and we don't expect anything is going to change because the Trump administration is not doubling down on the need to kind of stop, you know, carbon emissions, then we could look at potentially about a 10% drop in the U.S. economy by the end of the century. We could look at whole sections of the nation's kind of agricultural yields just kind of decline and produce all sorts of, you know, climate refugees in a very short order. So it was not a good picture, Sean.
No, that sounds like a really bad picture, actually.
You think? it's kind of the opposite of a good picture, isn't it?
Yeah.
I would say it's pretty as close to the worst possible picture.
I mean, and this shouldn't come as a surprise for anyone either.
Right.
I mean, really, like, we know that the ocean sea levels are going to rise. We know that means like cities like New York, Boston, Miami. I mean, take your pick, Portland, Maine, anything that lies within like 10 or 15 miles of the coast is just going to be flooded.
Yep.
I mean, well, New York's not going to be around anymore in 100 years, probably, if the sea level's raised by like 3 to 5 feet. Same thing with Boston. Parts of Philadelphia will be flooded just from the Delaware River widening during high tides. I mean, like, we are heading towards a potential disaster that there is really no engineering fix for.
No, and it's... I guess maybe it wasn't a good idea to start with actually total depression. Because now I'm like, I just really bummed myself out here for a second. But
I mean, I'm sorry to like camping everyone's like,
no, it's like I was like, you know, getting geared up here. I'm like, wait, what the hell did I just did? I mean, you were right. We shouldn't have led with this. So, I'm like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing here. But, you know, look. We're going to be unpacking this report more in the coming weeks, and the devastation about this. I think why this report is hitting is hitting its mark in ways that previous reports had not, is because it doesn't just focus on sea level rise, for example, right? That has become the most visible way. But you're also talking about agricultural yields. You're talking about
the desertification of like the Midwest.
Exactly. You're talking about the full extent of climate impacts, right?
Having a like food system that is already unsustainable and it has no biodiversity because of all the GM modification exactly. That goes on, and then they use a lot more resources and water, and now it's just going to get
so
happy times are
happy times
us.
Are here again. Yeah, that's right.
So you know like this is a really good transition to wanting the P tape.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, look, exactly. What I think we should do is I think we should bury our heads in the sand and think more pleasant thoughts, right? Because you know, Sean, I've decided, you
listen,
know,
this, some REM.
Well, look, if you don't believe in climate change, then you don't have to think about this stuff, right?
Yeah, I heard Trump had some like alternative theories.
Well, okay, so
this.
Listen, so
he had some consulting, right? Someone consulted him on his beliefs on climate change.
Yeah, the most important consultant, his gut. His gut consulted. He consulted his gut, Sean.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, that's what he did. That's where sometimes the gut is better than the brain, you see. And that's what he did. So, you know, I was thinking about like going through Washington. He did this interview with the Washington Post, and it was like, seriously, it's the kind of stuff that just killed you. But instead of me running through it, you have to listen to my voice. Chris Hayes did just a bang up job on this on a show the other night. And so he does this, you know, segment called Thing One, Thing Two, kind of these two related kind of short segments. And so his Thing Two this night is kind of what Trump said to the Washington Post about climate change. I want to play it for you. So this is and because we don't have the audio of the, you know, the interview is like, you know, it was just printed. So Chris Hayes is reading this, but I'm going to play the whole segment for you. And I want you to say he is reading this word for word as Trump said it. So if you think that the words don't make sense, that's because these are the words that Trump said, right? Not because Chris Hayes is reading it wrong, but this is as the transcript from the interview. So here you go.
the most powerful man in America and probably the world shared some thoughts yesterday on the single largest threat facing the planet and humankind, perhaps ever in history, climate change. Quote, and I'm going to read it. One of the problems that a lot of people like myself, we have very high levels of intelligence, but we're not necessarily such believers. You look at our air and our water, and it's right now at a record clean. But when you look at China, and you look at parts of Asia, and when you look at South America, and when you look at many other places in this world, including Russia, including just many other places, the air is incredibly dirty. And when you're talking about an atmosphere, oceans are very small. And it blows over, and it sails over. I mean, we take thousands of tons of garbage off our beaches all the time that comes over from Asia. It just flows right down the Pacific.
It flows.
And we say, where does this come from? And it takes many people to start off with. Number two, if you go back and if you look at articles, they talked about global freezing. They talked about at some point the planets could have freeze to death. Then it's going to die of heat exhaustion. There is movement in the atmosphere. There's no question. As to whether or not it's man-made and whether or not the effects that you're talking about are there, I don't see it. Not nearly like it is. Do we want clean water? Absolutely. Do we want clean air to breathe? Absolutely. The fire in California where I was, if you looked at the floor of the fire, they had trees that were falling. They did no forest management, no forest maintenance. And you can take a match like this and light a tree trunk when that thing is laying there for more than 14 or 15 months and it's a massive problem in California.
You know what
sometimes
else?
It's amusing to hear the unintelligible nonsense that comes from the gut or brain of this president. But if you care even a little bit about life on this planet in the future, our children's future, what we just heard should be terrifying to you.
And there it is.
So, you know what was also a major contributor to a forest fire?
Do tell.
A gender reveal party.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Did you see that video?
Yes, I did. It was more proof that that's really what's causing the downfall of everything, Sean. It's like
male fragility. Like,
unbelievable.
I mean, like, as soon as like he like launched that thing and exploded, I was just like, oh shit, we gotta get out of here. Like the whole entire like bushfire just like starts.
Yep.
Hey guys, I had this idea. I'm gonna go into the desert where like a big like amount of like grass and bush, and shoot off a grenade as my gender reveal party thing.
There you go, man. So that's that. There we have it. We have
that really- was just bad.
Yeah, we have really dire news coming out of the climate assessment, and we have a president who can't even finish a sentence in any kind of sense of coherency, and just basically says he trusts his gut over kind of all the best scientists in the world over what's going to happen, and I think Hayes is dead on, right? It should terrify us.
But you know what? At least we're giving him money for a border wall.
Well, yeah, you know, it's good. And that's good. Because you know what? It's like the more that we can do to kind of like prop this up and keep him in office a little while, at least he makes us laugh and laugh and laugh. So take it away, Sean. Chuck is in love.
I feel like there's a couple things here. Like, well, let's just start off with Chuck Schumer.
let's start them and say, yeah. Let's start with Chuck.
I mean, I want like a Democratic leadership to just stand up and say we are not giving a single dollar to Trump's border wall, and screw your wall, yep. Especially for like next week's, like when new Congress is going to be coming in. Let's not like. Can we just go on the offensive on this and have a 2-week government shutdown over this border wall and just destroy them in the media over this?
Yeah, let's review for a second, shall we? It's like the Democrats just achieve 40 seats, right? I mean, 40 seats is kind of where it sits right now. That last race got
in
called,
the House, yes,
right in the House. Yeah. Yes, I know. I know Chuck is in the Senate, but theoretically, right? There's some conversations that happen back and forth, right? So you just had the biggest midterm election gain, right, ever, right? The Democrats kind of win on this in this election, right? They actually, the blue wave did in fact happen, but it was more like a slow tide that was coming in, and those folks campaigned on no wall, new America, climate group, like anti-climate, let's get rid of, or let's have the new Green Deal moving forward, like on
kind investigating of, Trump.
Investigating Trump, right? All these folks
these
got elected.
Mandates.
Yes, they got elected on taking the offensive. And Chuck, all he had to do was follow their lead. Follow the lead of the things that win. And nope, same playbook. Well, Trump wants a wall. He wants $5 billion. Oh, we're just going to give him 1.6. Unbelievable, Sean.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And so, I mean, again, I have to agree. I have to agree. This is one thing that I agree with Maddow on, right, about this. Well, we can talk about this with Pelosi in a minute. But you know, one thing she says, like, you know, it's like – Nancy Pelosi, they just kind of got this huge win, right? And she's kind of like leading that caucus, right? And there's leadership challenges and things like this to her, and that gets all this coverage and headlines in the newspapers and stuff. And some of it is like, I think good to cover, right? Because it speaks to what's going on. But then Chuck Schumer, who's lost seats in the Senate, right, and who's given away how many like federal judges like at this point for nothing. Can't negotiate, has not kind of stood up at all and taken the offensive kind of as moving forward. And no one's calling to get rid of him. Where the hell are the people in the Senate stepping up and saying, we got to take out Schumer?
Yeah.
I mean, just like, you know, all you got to do is like say, Chuck, just come down here. You've done a good job for now, but it's time for you to rest because clearly you can't do this.
Yeah, I mean, like, it really wants me to have, like, Harry Reid come back.
Look,
Harry Reid was a good leader.
He was good at the internal stuff, right? He was good at the internal stuff. I said, frankly, I don't want Harry Reid back. I want new people.
I want new people, too. But, like, Harry Reid at least would have, like, said to go pound sand over, like, you know, your border wall stuff.
He
like,
would have, absolutely.
We're waiting until next month and... Once new Congress comes in and you want to have a shutdown over this, good. Go ahead and have a shutdown over this. We'll see how this plays out.
Right. And
you just like got slaughtered in an election and we have a mandate and you think you still have a mandate for this? You guys just lost like big time.
Yep. Well, and this is where like Mitch McConnell, and I swear to God, this is what Mitch McConnell plays Schumer so well. Right. Because what he does is he basically he turns everything into like, we have just been assaulted, so now we are going to fight back. There's no way we're going to give ground whatsoever, right, on this stuff. And then Schumer's like, oh, I guess we got to listen to Mitch, right? Because, you know, we don't have power, so we're going to have to compromise. And so he starts from, like, Mitch McConnell's endgame. And then I think, like, Mitch McConnell is kind of like, oh, my God, Schumer's starting from where we wanted
Schumer
to end up.
Schumer puts the ball down at like his own 20 and says, "All right, you have to try to score now."
Yeah, so McConnell's just like, "Okay, you're going to start where we wanted to end up, so we're going to just march back a few more yards, right, and say, "Oh, no, this is what we want," right? And see if we can coax him over a little bit further. Whatever. Yeah. Whatever. But meanwhile, right, so you've got that going on with Chuck Schumer in the Senate. But meanwhile, you have got the, you know, largest congressional progressive caucus ever. Right. That's huge.
Yeah. And they're going to be able to actually like wield power. They're not going to be like David Dayen was really good. Not just like some obscure caucus that people join just to like prove that they have like progressive bona fides and like, you know, now like these people will actually be able to wield power because of Ocasio-Cortez and Oman and all these other women that were elected this past year and all these other progressives. And I mean, and David Dayen had a really good interview on the Majority Report and pretty much said that, you know, the progressives made the right deal here in supporting and negotiating with Pelosi and having important policy committee positions and have these committees packed. At least 40% of the Democrats on these committees are going to be from the Progressive Caucus. And these are committees where, like, this type of legislation, Medicare for All and others, will – it might not happen right away, but it has the potential of transforming the party for years to come.
Yeah, and I think that
– from a policy position and push the party to the left.
Exactly. And I think that David Dayen was – that interview is so important because, like, Dayen really does get into the weeds a little bit on the actual process of governance. Right. And that means, you know, because the Democrats for the longest time, you know, have been, you know, they're notorious as, you know, they're yes, they are a big tent caucus. Right. There's people that are all over the place, but they have not been particularly good at kind of having a legislative strategy. Right. And part of what that means is thinking about, OK, where are the levers of power? And then how do we then kind of like get ourselves positioned as a party, right? So instead, you've got a lot of individuals competing for different from different positions because they want to be on this committee or they want to be on this committee. And so therefore, you leave certain committees, you know, unstaffed because who wants to be really on the Financial Services Committee or, you know, or the kind of these kind of – they seem to be boring committees. However, those are the places where a lot of the power
– Ways and Means.
Yeah, Ways and Means Committee, for example. So the centrist Democrats, right? This is what Dayen talks about in this interview. Centrist Democrats, like the Bill Clinton Democrats and all this kind of stuff, they were like saying to all the progressives, go ahead, you can have the judicial stuff, you can go off and kind of like have fun on the Supreme Court and all this stuff. We're going to get we're going to position ourselves on those committees that you don't want because they're boring but have a disproportional impact,
And we're going to use these to fundraise and sustain ourselves as a movement.
Right, exactly. Because once you're on the Ways and Means Committee, guess who wants to knock on your door every four minutes? The big money lobbyists, right? Because they know, the lobbyists know, that that's where some key decisions get made. And so that's where the centrist Democrats position themselves. So basically, you're going to have to see the Democrats are going to have an internal fight over it doesn't have to be a fight, right? But an internal, like, serious, like, you know, adult conversation about how to reshuffle the committee assignments. And, you know, and as Dan points out, there's a lot of these folks that they're really entrenched in seniority. They're entrenched in their kind of like their personal profile and not the party per se and not a long-term agenda, because the Democrats have not worked that way. So now they're actually in a position where they're going to have to confront those issues and say, if we actually want to be able to influence governance over the long term, not just this cycle, that we have to think about how we're placing and working with our committee assignments. And it's going to take some of the more senior people to kind of step aside and let some of these folks kind of move up, some of the newly elected people move into those committees so we can have certain influence and have some of the kind of key progressive voices that have been in places like the judiciary move over to other committees where they can use their experience, like the Ways and Means Committee, for example, use their experience to have an impact on the things that progressives wants, things like free college tuition, like
Medicare for all,
right? Those things that everyone campaigned on.
And one on.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, like, it's like, you know, the Republican Party, Pennsylvania Republican Party, is still going after people in the healthcare stuff front, even though that's what they like got destroyed on. Like, they're like, you know, they want socialized healthcare. Like, well, yeah, that was actually a major part of this election.
Yep.
Was socialized healthcare.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, we'll see. And like I said, we'll post a link to that interview here because it was an excellent. It's worth taking the time and listening carefully to that interview as a way of thinking about political strategy once you're talking about inside the government. I think that, look, I mean, what if anything,
it's different between movement politics and
right,
like actual politics.
Right. Well, it's like, look, I think that what we've seen since the 2016 election is that we've seen movements get really, really smart and increasingly get smart. Right. About organizing strategies and so on. And I think that, look, we got that. That part, I mean, continuing to moving and building on the movements that have been so successful, that have approached movement politics and not just to kind of like, hey, we're going to have a big rally and then we're going to go away, but have actually thought about putting political pressure where it matters and then continue to organize and build its base and change the conversation and then support candidates that can get elected to carry that out. I mean, all that stuff just took place in less than 2 years. That was amazing. Now there's that second part. We've got the outside is building. It's still nascent. It's building, but it's building a serious kind of power block. And now there's got to be the same kind of seriousness inside. Right. The inside outside strategy where the movements are working in conjunction with the kind of levers of power worker, you know, folks on the inside. That's, again, this is what we saw in different models of governance and party leadership. We saw this in Spain, the way that kind of emergent parties in Spain sought about their leadership. If you ever listen to Pramila Jayapal talking about how she understands her work as a representative, and if you look at the way the DSA understands its candidates that it supports and those candidates, how they understand the relationship with the DSA and their base, it's the same idea. Is there's a dialogue back and forth, you're working in conjunction. They're different areas and they require different strategies, but if you work in conjunction, we can have a huge impact if we can just keep our heads together, I think.
Yeah.
So...
I guess we didn't put this in the notes, but we could talk about the damage that Joe Crowley tried to do on the way out the door.
Yeah, go for it.
So one of the major concessions that the centrists were going to give was put Barbara Lee as the caucus chair, which was Crowley's spot. And he organized a campaign to get Hakeem Jeffries in there. Ryan Grimm reported this on The Intercept. And basically... And Crowley started a whisper campaign that Barbara Lee donated $1,000 to Ocasio-Cortez and made Barbara Lee look like she was part of the insurgency that was coming in that the Democrats were pissed off about. But what the thing was is that Barbara Lee gave $1,000 a few weeks after the election, the primary election, at a time when Steny Hoyer and other House congressional super PACs were giving money to Ocasio-Cortez.
Yep.
And so he did that as his parting shot because of him losing so badly to Ocasio-Cortez on the way out the door.
And
that movement of the party that is now going to be taking a lot more power.
Right. And Barbara Lee lost that bid, right? In part because of the work that he did.
And Barbara Lee was pretty much talked about as she was getting that position within the party.
Yep.
Like that was going to be given to her. And Crowley decides to mess that up on the way out the door.
Yep. Amazing how spite works within these circles, I'll tell you.
Yeah, which is going to be a bad thing because you're just going to embolden Democrats even more at this point. Or not Democrats, but the progressive wing of this party.
Yeah, these folks, they have any hope of kind of maintaining just their careers, right? And any kind of position of authority within the party, the last thing that they should be doing is this kind of crap. Because, I mean, like we were saying before the show today, it's like, look, the new generation of folks that just got elected, they're not going to keep quiet about these internal politics. It's going to go on blast.
And you look at, like, we were talking about this, like Ocasio-Cortez, her Twitter account is up at 1.32 million people, right? Like
A politician,
right? Like, that is at NBA superstar status. Like, Joel Embiid for the Sixers, who is one of the best players out there and one of the best social media users probably in the NBA, has 1.5 million followers, right? Like, yeah, so that's like a few hundred thousand. But that's like, that is so damn close to having, I mean, like she is at like NBA superstar level type of Twitter accounts.
Yep.
Like, I mean, you just start comparing her to people in pop culture. Like she's got like one of the largest like megaphones out there.
Yep.
Yep. And that is going to be really like as huge as a weapon for her agenda as anything else.
Yep.
You are not going to be able to shut her down with that Twitter account.
Nope, not at all. And it's only going to grow. I mean, like if you just for look at what's happened to like the Bernie Sanders campaign, like or to Bernie Sanders since the campaign. Have you checked his followings lately?
I have not.
Right. He has got 8.93 million followers, right? 8.93 million, right? That's huge, right? And then Ocasio-Cortez came on the national scene like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Right. And not only, and we've talked about this too,
she has 600,000 new followers the next day.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's kind of blown up. And you see what is happening it's amazing. What these new folks that are coming in is that they're building themselves a brand. Right. It's the most savvy political move I've seen. Right. So the images that are coming up on Instagram, the tweets that are going off, that the fact that they're linking each other and supporting each other on social media. Right. And making themselves kind of visibly part of a caucus before they've even taken office. Right. That is amazing. And that is how you do politics. Right. That is how you do movement politics on the inside. Amazing stuff. So crazy. You know, I think that I don't know how you feel about this, Sean, but, you know, Trump, Russia stuff, go watch MSNBC. You know, I don't know. I mean, I look at the stuff that's happened this week. That's the other big story, you know, big stories for the week. And you've got, you know, Michael Cohen. It's actually getting real. Right. In the Russia investigation, it's indictments are coming.
And it's coming just at a really bad time, too.
Well, for bad time for who? For Santa?
No, well, for Trump.
For Trump.
I mean, this is coming like weeks ahead of the Democrats taking over the House at this point. And it's just like, I mean, this could not have happened at the most inopportune time.
For Trump, yeah. I mean, I think, but on the other side, it's kind of like, you know, I think the right time.
Well, yeah, if you're Democrats, it's like, I mean, I'm just looking forward to the investigations that are going to be happening over the next 2 years.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, what's interesting is that
and the thing is, it's like, another thing Sam Sears said this week, you're not going to have someone as craven and incompetent as Devin Nunes running these committees or Trey Gowdy. Like, you're going to have, like, people who actually know how these things run.
Exactly.
And run these investigations not as like show trials, but just like putting everything out there. You know what I mean?
Yep. And you know, there on Maddow last night, she made a really interesting point. She had some folks on that she was, you know, talking about kind of what this means. One of the key parts about this, and I thought this was a really important point, was that what Cohen came forward and pleaded guilty to a felony. Right. And the felony that he pleaded guilty to as part of this was basically lying to Congress. Right. So what that means is that Mueller.
A lot of other people.
Well, but a couple things. Right. Yes. But Mueller, it shows you Mueller is willing to say to make a felony charge for lying to Congress. Right. Because in the past, like there's been like previous precedents, there's been times where the lying to Congress stuff, there's been kind of let go to the side in certain kinds of investigations. But Mueller has basically waited on this one about what's going to happen. People lied to Congress, nailed this one down. He pleaded guilty to a felony. So one, it says that, yes, exactly what you said. Other folks now have lied to Congress. And I'm just going to forget the guy's name. He was on the Intelligence Committee. He was on. And basically he said. Maddow asked him, said, well, you know, when Cohen came on, were there other people that were saying different stuff? And the guy was like, you know, being cagey about it and saying like, well, let's just put it this way. When other people came to testify, right, after Cohen had testified, nothing seemed to be inconsistent, right? And Maddow caught him on it. And of course, yes, this is what he meant by it. He says, yeah, so Cohen lied. And these other people came and basically said the same thing to support that version of the narrative. So everything seemed to be coordinated. Now that Cohen has kind of pulled the plug on that, all these other folks are like, uh-oh. Whoops. We're in trouble now. But more importantly, right, what to the point that you just made is that going forward – now you're going to have like Democrats ahead of these committees actually bringing people back in for to give testimony on stuff as part of this investigation.
Excuse me, you want to reconsider any previous statements said in front of this committee?
Oh, yeah. Or even new people and say, yeah. Hey, before you start to say anything, let me just kind of I'm going to hold up this picture. You might recognize him as Michael Cohen and the letters underneath spell. Felon. Right. And why? I'm going to hold up this lying to Congress.
So have Elijah Cummings do it.
Yeah, exactly. So just want you to know that before you speak, And decide whether or not you want to kind of like have a felony conviction on your thing. You know, I mean, it's like that is phenomenal. You got people are going to ask now real questions, move that stuff forward, and with the threat of felony convictions kind of coming right at their heels. I mean, that is quite a trap, rock hard place for those folks. So,
yeah.
So cool. So that's it. You know, I think definitely keep an eye on some BuzzFeed news. Sorry. There's some of their investigations. Jason Leopold, and I'm forgetting his co-author on this stuff, who's been breaking the news on this stuff. They've got some great source material. Keep an eye on BuzzFeed news on what some of the stuff about the Moscow dealings, where the Trump Tower investigations, and who was involved in that. On Maddow last night, the guy who was on Maddow from the reporting from BuzzFeed News was basically saying they're right at that point where in their reporting. They're right at the point where they almost can make the direct link between the business negotiations, the real estate deal for attempt to get a Moscow Trump tower, and Putin and the kind of and the hackers, right? And basically almost being able to connect all those and putting them in one place as part of a coordinated effort. So that's going to be very interesting to see how that stuff unfolds. So pretty cool. Anyways, I don't know. I'm looking at what we got left here on our list, Sean, and I don't know, man.
Sinclair Media?
Sinclair Media. Sinclair Media. Yeah. So if you recall Sinclair Media is the, this kind of right-wing conglomerate of like just basically been buying up local media stations all over the place and basically creating a second tier of Fox News stuff except through local affiliates. And one of the things that they do is that they go and they buy out these local stations, TV stations, and on their local news reporting, they basically force them to run these kind of pieces of commentary from Sinclair Media, which are kind of like right-wing talking points. And that's what they basically did. following that, what we saw was a tear gassing of families and children at the border after Trump had basically closed the borders to refugees and asylum seekers. And then they were tear gassed. Sinclair Media basically forced its stations basically to run this segment defending the use of tear gas on migrant children and families. That is the model that we're looking at going forward. So not a good thing. So we'll leave it for kind of in days to come to see what happens with some of the Facebook investigations, because that's just something to pay attention to, because Facebook is getting in deep and it's becoming even more so of a very, very sketchy player when it comes to opposition research, political behind the scenes players, and the use of kind of like, you know, unrestricted corporate funds as a way to go at kind of political foes. So that's going to be something to see where it goes. Anyways, anything else to kind of wrap up for segment one, Sean?
No, I think I'm good.
That sounds good. Lots of other stuff in the news to come. And Sean said there's been so much going on in Pennsylvania that he doesn't even know where to start. So we're going to have to pick and choose what we can focus in on in our segment two. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Want to remind everybody to become a member of Raging Chicken. Go to patreon.com/RCPress today. And if you could watch the video right now, you'd see Sean flipping me the bird for being a jerk. That's what it is. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Become a member today. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1930. That was the day the world lost the miner's angel, Mother Jones. She had crossed the country many times over, been involved in practically every strike that built the labor movement, stood with miners and steelworkers and mill children everywhere. Mother Jones had asked to be buried with the Verdin miners killed in the massacre of 1898 at Union Miners Cemetery in Mount Olive, Illinois. Dozens of labor leaders, including AFL President William Green, attended her funeral in Maryland, where she had been living. Then AFL representatives, several Illinois miners, and others boarded boarded the Baltimore and Ohio train to accompany her body to Mount Olive. Historian David Featherling describes the scene as her body arrived. A band played "Nearer My God to Thee" as onlookers bowed their heads and wept. Survivors of the Verdun riot bore the casket to the Odd Fellows Hall, where it lay in state. The town of 3500, with its strong and violent heritage, was thronged by thousands of coal diggers. At least 15,000 turned out for the funeral. Broadcast on WCFL, the Chicago Federation of Labor's radio station, the labor priest, Reverend John McGuire, gave the memorial address and officiated at the funeral in Mount Olive's Roman Catholic Church of the Ascension. He asked what weapons she had to fight the fight against oppression of working men. Only the great and burning conviction that oppression must end. Only an eloquent and flaming tongue that won men to her cause. Only a mother's heart torn by the suffering of the poor. Only a towering courage that made her carry on in the face of insuperable odds. Only a consuming love for the poor.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to Raging Chickens Out the Coop podcast. It is our PA focus. And Sean, from everything that is going on in the state, I may not even know where to begin. How do you think you can whittle it down? Choose your point of departure now.
All right. So with the dearth of information we have for this segment, let's start with Daryl Metcalf. Why not? It's a good point.
I think it is. You know, I was drinking a coffee right now, so I wish I would had it ready. So yes, let's start with Daryl Metcalf.
Daryl Metcalf
never gets old.
Metcalf wants some new committee positions. He's getting tired of House State Government Committee, and he either wants to get Judiciary, Education, or Consumer Affairs. Let's all hope he gets Consumer Affairs.
Daryl Metcalf.
Holy moly.
But that's one of the rumors coming out of Harrisburg. A couple weeks ago, they picked a new leadership for both caucuses. There's pretty much not that much change in the Republican caucus. Brian Cutler is now the majority leader. He's extremely conservative. Republicans have been talking about that they're, they've purged some of the other Republicans out of their ranks with this election. Their spin on this is that the Republicans that lost were union friendly Republicans to begin with.
That's so, what they're saying,
pretty much. And that they see their caucus as becoming more pure.
Great.
Yes.
Well, I think that's an accurate statement, actually.
Yes. It's a lot whiter.
It's a lot whiter. Exactly.
It's still pretty white. It's,
yeah, it is a heck of a lot whiter.
It's getting more pure in the gene pool and the ideology and the thinking. And they think that they're going to have even a more conservative forward-going agenda going forward with this. Even though they lost every mandate with the election, especially around like healthcare and stuff like this, they think that they can really go forward more conservative things from Terzai. And one of the people trying to do that is Daryl Metcalf, and he's trying to get on the House Education or House Judiciary Committee chair spots.
Man.
Which... anything's possible at this point.
No, you're really. I mean, you just can't count anything out, right? You just cannot count anything out. And especially if their takeaway is that now they have a more pure caucus, then really gloves are off when it comes to committee assignments and this kind of thing.
Yeah. So, which would be very interesting, seeing Daryl Metcalf getting a very important position, like House Education Committee spot, which deals with a lot of inner city like policy that deals with a lot of like that could directly affect, like, these are two committee spots he wants that can directly affect the lives of many black and brown people in the state.
Oh yeah.
And we've said it in the past that he's, pretty much the embodiment of the alt-right and is a racist, and he's going for really important committee positions.
Yeah, I think somebody needs to just form a committee called the Chair Committee, and go to him and say, "Daryl, right? You want to do the Chair Committee?" And he'll think it means committee chair of a really important committee, and then he could just go there and do that. But unfortunately, I think he is savvy enough about like wanting power. And frankly, the Republican caucus.
And he controls enough part of that caucus where he could sink a vote.
Right. No, exactly. And I said, you've said this for years now, right? I mean, you know, what basically they thought they could just keep on taking nips of the crack pipe, right? By, you know, supporting and keeping like supporting someone like Daryl Metcalf, right? But now, man, they're all crackheads, right? So, and Daryl's doing the supply, right? I mean, that's kind of what it comes on. He's the bottleneck of the supply.
Yeah.
To use that metaphor.
One of my older metaphors. Yeah, but
I still love it, though.
Yeah. I mean, like, you saw, like, so there was a – I was actually quoted in an article in The Nation a couple weeks ago. We didn't really get to talk about this. But before the election, I was interviewed back in the spring by Adam Eichen, who does some writing. He was covering March on Harrisburg, and we were talking about Daryl Metcalf. And, like, I said then, and I'll say now, I mean, he's a white nationalist. I mean, and this is who the party – I mean, we've seen the mainstreaming of the white nationalist movement here in Pennsylvania. We saw Republicans mainstreaming this movement back in the spring when they were sending petitions around with you know, these three percenters, these people associated with the Proud Boy organization, or this PA Patriot United group, which is – threatening to hold violent counter demonstrations against, you know, demonstrations that like pretty much your liberal minded people would come out to, not your anti-fascist left. And like this weekend, there's a protest in Harrisburg, racism against racism and white supremacy. And these same organizations have vowed to counter protest that. And they're claiming they're not racist, but they're counter protesting a protest on racism and white supremacy. but like, we've been talking about this type of gang mainstream within the Republican Party for a while, and Metcalf is the source of that.
Yep, exactly. And I just want to remind everybody, too, as well. I mean, I know that I keep on saying this ad nauseum for this, but this goes back, if you recall, if you've been listening to this podcast for that long, but following our reporting, is that this has been our argument at Raging Chicken about why you cover the white nationalist stuff. Is because, and why you cover what seems to be these crazy initiatives or crazy proposals or crazy legislative, like, you know, like initiatives that may not in the short term have a chance in hell of kind of like getting to a kind of full floor vote or actually getting voted in, but it charts a trajectory. And it charts a trajectory about what direction the party is going. And we've been like flagging this white nationalist crap for a while, right? And we took some heat, right, from folks on the left, from particular liberals, right, about saying, you know, we shouldn't kind of like pay attention to this, because somehow paying attention to this is actually the problem, not the white nationalism, but covering the fact that this stuff is on the rise was the problem. And what Sean has just pointed out there, when you look at Daryl Metcalf, he's got a really, you know, he's a certain kind of icon, and following what's been happening with him, that kind of bears out exactly the reason why that we've been trying to pay attention to this.
And people like that show up to his gun rallies every year.
Right.
He attracts these type of these patriot groups that are now popping up in Pennsylvania, or have been sticking around. And I mean, the groups that they were mainstreaming were part of the groups that were organizing the Proud Boys rally in Philadelphia a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
And, you know, local Republicans showed up to this. You had Val DiGiorgio invite Candace Owens from Turning Point USA, which is another cog in the alt-right machine. Might not be openly racist. Well, they are openly racist in their like their private chat logs and stuff like that. But I mean, Turning Point USA is another one of these groups that are just spewing out nonsense, and that the right wing is like the Republican Party is mainstreaming Diamond and Silk and so on. I mean, it's yeah.
Yep.
We didn't really like, I guess, touch upon it that explicitly throughout this election. But I mean, like, this is what they're doing.
There it is.
Or I don't know if we could say more explicitly enough.
Well, yeah. I mean, exactly. I mean, when we've been, I would say we've been charting this for a long period of time. We've been kind of raising the flags about how this is happening, and then seeing it kind of, you know, quite a bit. And you know, when you start talking about a caucus, starts talking about what it's doing is becoming more pure. That is, I mean, seriously, that signals loud
and
clear.
That's a dog whistle.
Exactly. I mean, it's at the point where it's barely even a dog whistle anymore. I mean, how close do you need to be to fascist rhetoric, right? You know what I'm saying? About, you know, the purity of the party. This is exactly the kind of stuff that you see within the kind of fascist discourse and white nationalist discourse. So there you have it, man. There you have it. So, hey, looking out for our good friend
Daryl Metcalf.
Check out where the guy's getting committee assignments, because I'll tell you, he gets on the Education Committee or the Judiciary Committee. You can plan on us giving some extra attention to there, because all craziness is about to break loose.
Yeah, I will be for sure. That's that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer, exactly. Oh, cool, man. So what's going on? What's going on with Lindsey Williams here? We're talking about a little bit about this before the show.
Yes. So there is this thing going on that Senator Joe Scarnati is threatening not to seat Lindsey Williams on January 1st, which is when swearing-in day occurs, because of a residency issue that she has or potentially has. They are claiming that so background story is the Republicans lost a seat. This was a seat that got flipped out in western Pennsylvania. Randy Volokovich held this seat for a number of years. He was primaried by someone who is further to the right than he was, named Jeremy Schaefer. Schaefer beat Volokovich. And then Lindsey Williams ran a pretty tough campaign out there. Though one of the things I heard when we were talking about this effect with Connor Lamb, apparently the Lamb campaign was not allowing other campaigns to canvass and hand out their material, and they would not hand out material for other campaigns. So like some of the campaigning, the door knocking that was going on, say, in eastern Pennsylvania with Scanlon or Dean, you had Dean and the rest of the down ballot representatives also handing out literature at that same time. Connor Lamb would not do that. Was not doing that out in western Pennsylvania. This race, which should have been an easily won race, actually, she pulled off by like 600-700 votes. Her residency issue is that technically she would not be a Pennsylvania resident until like the middle of January 2019, which would be like 4 years from when she moved to Pennsylvania. And they're threatening not to seat her over that. They're threatening not to seat her over a really small technicality in the state constitution. Well, because they don't want to lose that seat, and it's a power grab.
Yep. Pretty crazy.
And I mean, like, also the iconography behind this, in like, you know, the year that like women have made some of the most substantial gains in, you know, electoral history. You have someone here like Senator Scarnati, who has gone to great lengths to protect the Catholic Church and abusers. And, you know, is also now refusing to seat or threatening to not seat a Democratic elected woman to office.
Which, have it.
And Pennsylvania is still one of the most underrepresented states in the country when it comes to having female representation within our state legislature. And Senator Scarnati wants to keep it that way.
There you go. Let's never ever forget the fact that
like these people will not give up power.
Right, exactly.
Even if it's over one seat.
And they will fight tooth and nail for it. They will fight as dirty as possible, right, in order to do this stuff. And, you know, again, the Democrats have historically not done that kind of stuff. And I'm not arguing that they should, but I'm saying like this is the way that, what, you know, you got to fight this stuff to the tooth and nail, because they will do whatever it takes.
Yeah. And I mean, if this happens again next election, then all hell's going to break loose, because this is when the gerrymandering stuff is going to happen. Redistricting's happening in the next session, the second half of Wolf's final term. And this is a precursor to that. And also, I think this is a sort of retaliation from the pressure it was put on with the abuse bill that didn't get voted upon again at the end of this year.
Ah, joy, joy, joy. Joy, joy, joy.
Or Yeah, they're just trying to lose a court case so their buddies can get a paycheck.
Yeah, I mean,
jobs.
Either way, right? It's a win-win for them. Right?
I mean, pretty much like any major court battle that this office has held over the past, three or four years, they have lost.
Yep. And they're going to do this.
I think they'll lose again.
Well, they will lose again, I think.
And they'll just completely poison any relationship that they're going to have with the Democratic caucus up here when it comes to getting substantive stuff done, like the budget. Like, it's going to, again, it's purifying their caucus.
Yep.
Like, it's, you lost the union-friendly Republicans in the Southeast with Stuart Greenleaf's seat going up, with Rafferty losing to Katie Muth, with McGarrigle losing to Tim Kearney. Like, I mean, they lost some serious moderate Republicans.
Right.
So now they think they can get away with this stuff.
Right. Exactly. So, well, at least they're going to, have an opportunity to have a nice reception at a beautiful location, to drown
in
their
Manhattan.
Sorrows. In Manhattan. Exactly. The good old PA society, Sean. The good old PA society.
Yes. Pennsylvania's most perverse like tradition of debauchery that happens every year is going on right now in Manhattan, in the east side of Manhattan, and it started last night, and in true to PA society form, it opened up with Christine Toretti. She is a power broker within the Republican Party. She owned a drilling company out in Western Pennsylvania involved in the oil and gas industry. You never hear too much of her. Like, she's not a villain within the party, but she may as well be. She's a trustee of the Scaife Foundation, and she's Trump's pick to become the ambassador of Malta, which is such a plush job.
Yep. And so let's say, this, the Pennsylvania Society dinner, the special thing is like, and this is what the dinner is held at the Waldorf Astoria, right?
Yeah.
That's the Waldorf, the little orphan Annie place. Right? This is what we're talking about here.
This is like black shirt, shiny black tie and suit type thing. Like, these are like $3,000 suit type events you're putting on. Like, it is some of the most swankiest, tradition in Pennsylvania. The Republicans are also having a thing with Laura Trump.
Well, that's
Eric's wife.
Yeah.
So, as J.J. Abbott from the governor's office said, the Department of We've Learned Nothing is striking again.
There you go.
Yeah. So.
Beautiful. Well, they have been around since 1899. So, and it really is a nonprofit charitable organization that is all about history, Sean. It's just about history.
Yes. So. Yeah. It's about tradition at this point. And we should keep this tradition going. We should be proud of our tradition. And not only do lobbyists influence and openly peddle corruption in Harrisburg, they get to do it from some of the places in the east side of Manhattan, in the Upper East Side.
I love it. Well, you know their official motto, Sean, or their purpose? It's uniting all Pennsylvanians at home and away from home in bonds of friendship and devotion to their native or adopted state. That's all it's about. I don't know why you're making such a big deal.
So this is for like the proletariat.
Exactly. Well, only rich people can go there, but they're there really for the rest of us. So we can watch them and be entertained by their largesse, so to speak. Oh, God. Oh, boy. That is the state of our politics, folks. State of our politics. So what do you think will come out of this, by the way?
Out of what?
Out of the PA society. I mean, there should be some major, talking points that come out of there. Should be a whole purpose behind it. They're going to come back with a renewed sense of vigor and love for our Commonwealth.
Yeah, I'm not going to go that far.
Yeah, I think they're going to come back with hangovers, if you ask me. But that's about it. And a new sense of like self-importance. But whatever, man. That's who we are. That's who we are. All right. Anything else going on in the state, Sean? I mean, anything else from the list that we could actually cover? Because there's so much we've got that we can't get through.
No. I mean, Wolf issued a couple. He's going to be putting a gerrymandering commission together. And that really just pissed off Republicans.
Yeah.
Well, I think he did that on purpose.
Yeah. Well, I hope so.
He did that the day that no one was in the building. Like, I mean, you think about the timing of that. They released it yesterday afternoon when everyone's on their way up to Manhattan.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. It's like the reverse of Mueller's been doing this, right? Every time Trump's making a trip someplace, because Trump's down to the G20 now, right? Supposedly not meeting with Putin, right? And this is the second time in a row that Trump's getting on a plane to go to some kind of like thing where he's potentially going to go someplace and meet Putin, that Mueller drops like a major indictment, or Cohen comes out and like pleads guilty to a bunch of charges. The last time Cohen pleaded guilty was the same kind of scenario, except he was going, I can't remember exactly where he's going, someplace in Europe. But so there you go. This is just kind of like the same thing.
I mean, the caravans made it back to the news.
The caravans made it back in the news.
Yeah,
which one?
Mueller's. Well, I mean, like, different stories about the caravan and all. I mean, you can tell, like, when Trump knows something's coming down the pike.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we got to lob some tear gas down at these, kids. Exactly. Got to lob some tear gas at these kids so, people don't pay attention to the upcoming Manafort and Mueller news.
Yeah. Well, you know, at least if there's any saving grace to it all, at least it's becoming predictable, I hope, where you can see that when this kind of stuff goes on, that you know there's other major stuff that's going on. Don't bite too hard on the shiny thing, right? Make sure that you fight like hell that he's not going to hurt a whole lot of people in the meantime. So,
yeah.
Crazy.
All
right, man. Well, so that's it for Pennsylvania this week. Like I said, we're lagging a little bit after coming out of Thanksgiving and things like this. So I'm just joking that we don't have, we have this ton of stuff going on. We don't have a whole bunch of stuff here. There are some really cool things that are going on in the state. We're just making our way back into the fun. It's the beginning of the holiday season. Give us a break. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be right back after this with Last Call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. It's today's last call. And it is indeed, it is a return of, can you believe it?
Space Force. Space is a war-fighting domain, just like the land, air, and sea.
That's right. The Space Force has made it back into the news with the return of space news here on the Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. Last call. right? So time is running out. So basically, Deputy Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan, it was basically been given a timeline, said that by December, they're going to have a proposal for the Space Force. That, remember, that Trump kind of like pulled that out of the dark side of the moon? As Rick would say, like pulled that out and said, hey, look, why don't we have a Space Force? That sounds kind of good. Well, they're actually pushing forward on this. There's going to be a meeting either Tuesday or Wednesday of this coming week with Mike Pence, because Mike Pence is always tingly for space stuff. I'll never forget that. You ever see that picture, Sean, of Mike Pence going up to the NASA capsule with a big sign on it that says, do not touch? And he's got his hand on it.
Right? No.
Like, yeah, because he's just like, he's like, oh, my God, look at this beautiful thing. It's been in space. Oh, I can't wait to go home and tell my wife about it. But he's so Mike Pence is like a huge promoter of space stuff and the privatization of space and all the kind of stuff is getting behind the Space Force. So we're looking forward to basically launching out some sort of legislative initiative to bring the Space Force into being as another branch of the U.S. military. Now, it's unclear about like how much movement this is going to get. My guess is going to be the reason why they're trying to push so hard for December to see if maybe they can get something in the works before the new Congress comes into play. But who knows? It's going to be very interesting to see what happens. We're going to be following the Space Force, the final throes of the Space Force here, and see what happens. But in the meantime, you've got NASA has definitely taken an initiative on further space exploration with Jim Bridenstine, who is a Trump appointee, and they are going full throttle with the privatization of space. So here's the thing that something that's going to be watching. You recall that part of my line about reason why kind of looking at this stuff and following this stuff in space is, number one, I just like it. But number two is that this is the next frontier for kind of what I, you know, always talked to about as galactic capitalists. So you're looking at these folks like Elon Musk. You're looking at, what all these kind of billionaires are doing right now in terms of the race to conquer space and basically open that up for commerce. That is going to be happening now in terms of race for what's going to happen on the moon. And so NASA just selected 9 companies to be eligible for future contracts, like with the government, to deliver payloads to the surface of the moon. Now, they're not guaranteed any future profits on this stuff, but basically they're setting the stage for saying, okay, yes, we are actually going to start doing this kind of colonization or bring the stuff kind of back to the moon, establishing some sort of presence on the moon or at least in some orbiting station. That's been kind of one of the theories about how they're eventually going to make the trip to Mars sustainable over the long term. But these are all private companies and they are in it to profit. Right. So what you're going to start to see, I guarantee this is in the short end of our lifetime, not in the long end of it, but in the short end of our lifetime, we're going to start seeing that explosion of space tourism and so on. You've already seen some Amazon has been a kind of Blue Origin is their company. Jeff Bezos' company is that where they've been testing the capsules with these huge windows on it to begin taking people into orbit as part of space tourism. You've had, of course, Virgin Atlantic has long wanted to conquer the space tourism industry. Elon Musk's recent initiative is to have somebody go out and orbit around the moon, and that's supposed to be happening in the next few years. And they're going to bring a treasure trove, or I think there's like 10 people that are going to be on this trip around the moon. There's going to be some artists and musicians that are going to be inspired by the trip around the moon and to bring back cultural artifacts. So this stuff, it sounds crazy. I get it. But this is about the extraction of profit, right? And are we going to repeat the same kind of models of colonization that Europe initially had relied upon in the past, and that's what it looks like going forward. So I will be back on my space tip on this one. Now, the cool stuff on the scientific end of things is that the InSight lander on Monday touched down on Mars successfully. It is the first time that you had a lander or rover come down to Mars the last 6 years. It started producing its first images of there. And they're going to actually do something kind of cool. Like, that's actually got some really good scientific like purpose behind it, is that they're going to be studying the internal composition of Mars. Because up until now, they've been having to simply kind of guess at it based upon external observations and so on. But now they're going to be actually studying seismic activity. Not seismic activity is the wrong word, but vibrations and different kinds of seismic activity on the planet to figure out the internal part. Why that's interesting and scientifically interesting, when you're thinking about the formation of atmospheres, right? One of the reasons why Earth's atmosphere has stayed along or has stayed around has to do with our magnetosphere, right? The fact that we generate a magnetic field that shields the Earth from some whole bunch of solar particles that prevents the, you know, the atmosphere from being virtually kind of blown off. And Mars does not have that kind of magnetosphere, right? So one of the reasons why they say even those long-term ideas that people have about, you know, terraforming Mars and all this stuff, they run into this issue when it comes to a magnetosphere, about the ability to stave off the kind of like bombardment of radiation that the Earth is able to keep away. So it's just kind of like they're going to be able to figure out what kind of internal dynamics are there. And that is actually kind of a cool process. So the InSight lander, unlike what we saw with the Curiosity rover, the Opportunity rovers, this is going to be in one place. It's on the, like, the, what was it, the Planitia? I'm going to forget the name of it. My map's not up. But it's going to be staying put right around just north of the equator and be studying the kind of seismic activity on Mars for a long time. So that was really cool to see. My kids are all excited about it because, of course, I'm excited about it. I show them pictures about, you know, the first pictures from Mars from the InSight lander, looking at the horizon and stuff. It's pretty cool. Having said that, I am surprised that Sean is still awake at this point. So that's kudos to Sean for being awake. But the one thing that I thought, you know, at least that might pique your interest a tad bit, Sean, is that they on the space station, they just used the first ever onboard AI, right? It's basically this little sphere, and then it's got like one side of the sphere has actually looks like a tablet. So it's got a tablet embedded in the side of a sphere, and it actually has, like, you know, two eyes and a mouth, smiley face, right? But it's an AI, and it's called Simon, C-I-M-O-N. And if you want to check it out, you go to the link there. But, you know, I look at the, you know, bringing the AI, right, the intelligent computer on board to help guide the astronauts, basically is a staple of every, like, science fiction exploration novel or movie when it goes wrong, right? Whether you're talking about aliens or whether you're talking about 2001 A Space Odyssey or so on. But here we go, man. We're bringing AI into space. So now they'll be able to say, Alexa, how do I fix the robotic arm on the space station? So there you have it. Sean's awake still. Okay. Sean's very uncomfortable.
Sorry.
No worries. That's my space stuff. But come on, I've let you off. I haven't had space news in a long time. I've let, you know, so indulge me. the one thing I want to give a shout out, I said, you know, said this in the intro today, but Breadbox and Bakery, the Ryman, he's the guy who runs the Breadbox and Bakery in Perkasie. He also used to run the Down to Earth Cafe, which I've plugged multiple times on this show because they used to have, like, food they used to bring up and cater with free will and stuff. They basically have moved into this awesome space in right in the center of Perkasie, at the corner of Market and 7th Street in Perkasie. And Perkasie's got this interesting history where a good portion of the town got burned down, right, in the 80s. And there was a historic hotel called the American Hotel, like on the same corner. And basically what happened was that there was right behind this kind of main street, there were these piles where they would store, like, excess coal and things like this. And there were some kids playing with fire, right? And they lit it up, literally. And burnt down this whole section of the town. And so since then, there was, there's been some kind of rebuilding of that area. But there was this one part that was just an open lot. And it had been an open lot for, you know, for as long as I had lived there until about, 3 years ago, maybe. And they, some developers decided to come in. Same some of the folks, some of the people that worked on the development of Doylestown, come into Perkasie to kind of help build this kind of master plan or whatever. And they rebuilt kind of some apartments, like mixed use stuff on this corner, and you know where the American Hotel used to be. And they've had a lot of hope that this was going to kind of help bring, you know, more folks to the center of Perkasie like it used to be, kind of thing. Well, this corner space has got this nice round turret on it, beautiful windows on it, but it's been sitting empty now for a couple years. And for whatever, you know, for whatever reason, whatever, they were charging too much initially and a whole bunch of stuff like this. But Ryman has basically made the move. So he moved a few doors up in terms of the bakery, but closed down Down Earth Cafe and brought that in. They're consolidating Down Earth Cafe and basically the Bread Box and Bakery. And now it is the Bread Box and Bakery. It's sitting on there. And it's 1 North 7th Street, like on the corner of Market and 7th. And it's just opened. It is beautiful inside. A whole bunch of kind of like handcrafted wood countertops. There's this in the turn area where you've got this kind of circle of windows. They built a custom made circle bench in there for larger groups. They're going to be having they have space there for community events and parties and things. And in addition to bringing back just awesome food. And what's great about the food that they have there at the Bread Box and Bakery in Perkasie is they everything is like they're committed to drawing from local ingredients, supporting local farmers and having sustainable stuff as organic as they can get it. Local coffee roasters, everything like this. So for example, you can go down there, I'm telling you, for their breakfast, they've got this awesome, they do like huevos rancheros and things like this. But one of my favorites is they've got a breakfast burrito in there with like eggs, rice and beans and so on. They've got the classic croissant sandwich, right? You can get the croissants for breakfast. Great lunch. Some of their soups are fantastic. So if you're in the Perkasie area, you know, even if you're passing down by 309, you see that exit, take a little time, stop into the Bread Box and Bakery and tell them, hey, you heard about it on the Out to Coop podcast and you just wanted to come out and give your support. You can pick up local honey there. You can pick up some local maple syrup. Local roasted coffee, and the food is fantastic and the people are great and the space is beautiful. So I'm so happy for Ryman and everyone who works and all the bakers who've kept that place growing, and to see that they're in Perkasie, I'm very, very excited about it. And with that, every year Perkasie has a tree lighting ceremony, and on Wednesday, December 5th, they're going to have it's going to be the annual season where Free Will Brewery, oh God, I can't even get this. Free Will will be working with the Bread Box and Bakery, and they're going to have beer there. They're going to have Christmas cookies from the Bread Box and Bakery, and they're going to have all sorts of kind of festivities going on. So do check that out at Free Will and up on the for the tree lighting on the 5th, on that Wednesday 5th. It should be freaking awesome. I was looking at a bunch of new beer releases at Free Will, but I, you know, didn't get around to it. So we'll get back to it next week. So that's what I got. Anything kind of like fun happening for you, Sean? Anything kind of cool happening?
I went to Free Will, or no? I went to Forest and Main when I was home a couple of times.
Yes, and was it as wonderful experience as it had been in the past?
As always.
As always.
And so met a couple of people from the local Bucksmont DSA or involved with like progressive activism up in up in the Montgomery County, Bucks County area. I put a thing up on Facebook. I was like, hey, I'm going to Forest, Maine. Who wants to join me? And a couple of people showed up. So,
oh, cool, man.
Yeah. And they had some really interesting stuff on. One was an almond milk sugar IPA.
Oh, my God.
Almond vanilla milk sugar IPA.
That sounds delicious.
It was really good. I had that. It was called the Fancies. The Fancies, yes. Mm. And then I ended up picking up a 4-pack of a raspberry chocolate coffee stout, imperial stout, to have.
You're not a big stout fan, though, are you?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I thought you weren't.
No, I love stouts.
I thought you also be like poo-poo on stouts. You're like, man, I don't like stouts.
Like pastry stouts.
Well, okay. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, but I like stouts. one of my favorite coffees is a stout. Or one of my favorite beers is a stout.
Oh, that's true. What am I thinking? I don't know.
Yeah. Sunny side up.
Oh. Oh, that's bringing up some memories of a place that used to work, I think. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Rather not talk about it.
Yeah, I know. I know. That's why I'm just letting it sit. I'm just letting it sit. Well, that's cool to hear. I say one thing I should mention for Free Will, as every you know, I you know, whatever they have every year, they put out these amazing they're like Belgian style quad ales, right? And it's like the Ella and Ella and
Ralphius,
yeah. And so they did this year, they got a whole bunch of new mixes on this. So they had a whole bunch of versions. So they've got like a maple Ella, they've got a Merlot grape Ella. And I haven't had them yet, so I can't tell you exactly what they're like, but they're, man, holy moly. They look fantastic. And every time, every year I go and grab different bottles of this stuff, and they're always, you know, come out right before the holidays, and they're always fantastic. So those are actually some really good things to look
at. Fun thing about the Ralphius, I drank my Ralphius right after the Eagles won the Super Bowl.
How much do you remember of what happened afterwards?
That was my nightcap.
That's nice.
Yes. And then I was really hungover the next day.
Oh, I bet you were, because those are pretty heavy.
Yeah.
Let me tell the one thing I'm gonna have to go through this. So, but the one thing I wanted to point out, if I can find this real quick, I'm not gonna have it. So they released it. Free Will released. This is one thing I should mention. Free Will released a bunch of sours, and they were in this kind of like the floral series, right? So they had like these sours with flowers, and I had the one with lavender last week. And I, you know, frankly, I'll be honest with you. When I was having it, I was like, I don't know how I feel about the floral stuff, right? Having brewed with flowers and things. But again, it was like from this, you know, right in right by Peace Valley here, Lake Jean, Peace Valley here in Bucks County. There's a lavender farm there, Bucks County Lavender Farm. And so they used local stuff. I said, pick up bottles and check it out. I had that one with lavender, and it was so good. I was totally surprised by it. Did not expect that I was going to like be really thrilled with it, which got me to go out and kind of pick up a couple bottles of their other some of the other floral stuff. And I know there's a few of those left. So if you're in the neighborhood, once again, you're down at Free Will Brewing, pick up some of those sours. If they got the lavender one, I highly recommend it. It's not kind of what, well, at least for me, it was not what I was expecting it to taste like in my head. It just had such a nice kind of sweet, smooth flavor. The lavender came in kind of really late and very subtly, and it was just a super drinking beer. And it had a sour. Some people don't like the sours. You get that little bite in the sour. And somehow with the lavender and the way they put that together, it smoothed even that out a little bit. So you got that nice sour flavor. Didn't have as much of the bite and this nice lavender finish. Great stuff. So check that out if you want. So that's my plug. I guess I did have something to talk about with the beer, but cool. But anything else going on, Sean?
No, nothing else is really going on.
Yeah, so we're gonna tie a bow on this one, folks, and I'm gonna say see ya. We're kind of like stumbling our way back into the podcast, and as we kind of kick out this holiday season, I do want to kind of just put one last plug into look, if you can. Right. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press. Go into patreon.com/RC Press. Become a member for as little as $5 a month. And if you know, if you're thinking about the end of season giving and that kind of thing where you're saying, OK, you know, who do I want to give to? It's like, no, we are not a nonprofit organization. Right. We are not really a for-profit organization. It's kind of a weird kind of in between, because all the money that comes in for our membership goes to either pay for our server space or goes back into kind of supporting kind of writers and hopefully growing this platform. So everything that you do helps to make the work what it's going to be. And, you know, in the coming months that we're going to be trying some different things out, I think. And I'm probably going to be sending some polls out through our kind of mailing list. And so you can go on our website at RagingChickenPress.org and you can sign up for our mailing list there. And I know a lot of you have been joining the mailing list of the last, I don't know, since – since really October and so. And so I'm going to start kind of coming back to that mailing list a little bit and start asking you some questions about what you'd like to see going forward and that kind of stuff. So we got a bunch of ideas about what to do with this platform and with the website. You know, and as always, if you are interested in writing for Raging Chicken Press, get in touch with me at ragingchickenpress@gmail.com, and I'd love to talk to you. So anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
No.
All right, man.
Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper. You know why? Because what's on the other end of that is the Space Force. That's right. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Thanks for tuning in today. If I can get the words out. Talk to you next week.
See ya!